Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're talking about pets and pet care today on the show. I want to welcome Dr. Bill Stork to the show. He's been with the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic for over 25 years, works with large and small animals. He's also an author of a couple of books, writes a blog, and contributes articles to local newspapers. So we'll talk with Dr. Bill about the importance of getting your older pet regular health care. And, of course, we'll be taking your other pet questions as well as we move along. So are you concerned about your older pet's health? What pet questions do you have? Join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Bill Stork, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, good morning, Larry. Good to be with you. Good to meet the legendary Larry Mueller.
Oh, it's great to meet you. You're a legend in, for sure. And I want you to talk about your program just to start. Tell us about your clinic. What kinds of animals do you see?
Well, most things that walk through the door. When I started at this practice over 25 years ago, we were an 80% food animal and production veterinary clinic, and about 20% of what we did was companion animals. And in the time in between, we've effectively flipped the script, and production animals are a much smaller percentage of what we do. And we see well over 95% of companion animals. And I think one of the things that may set our clinic apart from others, although as an industry, veterinarians at large are starting to pay a lot of attention to behavior and diminishing stress. We're the first low-stress certified veterinary clinic in the state of Wisconsin. And what that means is we work really hard to convert that telephone call that used to be to the effect of, oh my God, as soon as I pick up the telephone to make the appointment, the dog hides behind the couch, to the client who reports that if we want to drive by the clinic, we have to stop in and get a treat because otherwise the dog will whine and bark. And yes, that's the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, but that's the industry as a whole as well. We work really hard to diminish the stress of veterinary visits.
That's wonderful. How has COVID-19 affected your work with your clients?
Pretty dramatically. Veterinary medicine is very much a relationship business, and some of the most valuable time that we spend in appointments is getting to know our clients, and it allows us to be able to administer to their pets even more effectively. And it's a little bit like a track meet here lately because we're spending a lot of time practicing curbside veterinary medicine, in which case, for the most part, the clients are in the parking lot. We go out, have our discussions as far as history and signalment in the parking lot, bring the dogs in the clinic, do our physical examinations and decide what our recommended course of treatment is going to be, go back out to the parking lot and talk to the clients again. That's our in-person visits, but what it has also done is kind of hit fast forward on an aspect of practice that has been in the human side for a good long time, and that's telemedicine. In order to separate people, in order to create space and a schedule, and in order to save space in our building, we're moving faster than we've ever been towards telemedicine. And we receive a lot of videos, a lot of pictures, and a lot of emails from clients to try and diagnose how to help an animal over the telephone or by email.
Yeah, and if that doesn't work or you need a closer look, then they come in, I assume.
You bet, yeah.
We wanted to talk about older pets today. You'd mentioned to us that 70% of dogs and cats do not see a veterinarian within the 18 months before they are euthanized.
Which is a sobering statistic. Here at our clinic, we have a program called Pet Partners, and we team up with our local Humane Society, the Jefferson County Humane Society, and once or twice a month, we will pick a topic, or in this particular case, the topic was picked for me, And we go to the Humane Society and we do lectures on anything from socializing your pets to fearful animals to, in this case, aged animals. And somehow the topic of aging animals was foisted upon me. And the minute I started doing my research, the first statistic that I ran across was that one, that 70% of all pets don't see a veterinarian within 18 months before they are euthanized. And that was profoundly disturbing to me.
Why do you think owners sometimes dismiss health problems in their older pets?
I don't think they necessarily dismiss health problems in their older pets. And one of the most common phrases that we'll hear is, oh, he's just getting old. And as is the case with you and I, or our pets for that matter, I'm profoundly interested in the components of getting old that we can actually affect. Mobility is a very big issue. Nutrition, weight up, weight down. Water consumption is something that we talk about a great deal and can be indicative of underlying diseases, whether it be kidney disease, diabetes, what have you. And what, as a veterinarian, as veterinarians, as a profession, what I think we've somewhat failed to do is educate people properly on the fact that our paradigm very much shifts. For example, I just got done having my ears cleaned out by a four-month-old Cocker Spaniel puppy. And in that visit, we talk about vaccinations, we talk about socialization, house training, and all of the front end of life type situations. During the middle of life, they have a tendency to become easy keepers. And we think about vaccines, we talk about weight, we talk about exercise and things like that. But what we haven't done as a profession is to communicate with people that as those dogs age, we start to become different and interested in an entirely different set of parameters and a different set of considerations. The questions that your doctor or your veterinarian will ask you, any difficulties with his get around, that's all about his mobility, any problems with his appetite, his water intake, his cognition, has his or her behavior changed any? Those can all be an early indicator of underlying disease. And whether it be nutrition, whether it be supplementary medication, or for that matter, whether it be their environment, frequently, there are things that we can do to make those animals more comfortable, because in veterinary medicine, we have the beautiful gift of administering to quality of life from start to finish. And that's what we're all about.
Yeah. So how do we keep our pets age in a healthy way?
Well, some of the things that your veterinarian will talk to you about throughout their life are, one, weight. Weight is a really big deal, and especially in cats, it's not unusual for us to find cats that are fairly profoundly overweight, because food is love. And oftentimes, pets are supportive to their owners, and those can be owners with disabilities, that can be owners that are aged themselves, in which case they feed them because they get positively fed back. Well, obese pets are much more likely to develop diabetes is the perfect example. Pancreatitis in dogs is another example. And, of course, mobility issues. A perfect example was a legendary golden retriever we had in practice years ago with potentially the coolest name I've ever heard for a dog. His name was Keo Jackson. And Keo Jackson weighed 144 pounds.
Oh.
And owners were hardworking construction workers and a nurse, and we set them about a nutrition and exercise program, and Keo Jackson went from 144 to 79 pounds.
Whoa.
And once we got back to 79 pounds, the owner reported to me, "Dr. Stork, it is like we had a puppy again, a whole new dog."
Oh, man, what a great story.
Yeah, and one of the things that we'll talk to people about fairly frequently is somewhere around middle age, your veterinary may start to talk to you about doing annual blood work. CBC's chemistry panels. And the purpose of that is to establish your pet's baseline, because normal is your pet's blood work when they are healthy, so that when they enter what we consider the senior or the geriatric years, then we're better able to judge what is a change in those values. And change is what matters.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about food design for older pets?
Well, one of my associates, Dr. Clark, was with me for a solid 13 years. And when my own pet was aging, Remy was a 13-year-old yellow lab, and this dog was an absolute legend. And the minute she started not eating all of her normal Fromm's Gold food that we were feeding to her, I started to lose my mind. And that happens fairly regularly, regardless of how long you've been in practice, regardless of how many continuing education meetings you've been to. When it's your dog that gets sick, you forget everything that you've ever known. But thankfully, veterinary medicine is a fairly collegial profession, and I could turn to my associate, Dr. Clark, who said, you know, Bill, I've never gotten a dog across the finish line without having to step up their nutrition. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, and there are components to senior diets that can be beneficial, don't get me wrong, but some of the things that we particularly pay attention to is sometimes they don't smell as well. They don't detect as well. Dental health is a very big deal. That can have a significant impact on their intake. And sometimes that involves adding some low-sodium beef broth to what we normally feed them. Sometimes they get topped off with a little cheese or a little cottage cheese, a little leftover mashed potatoes. And that may sound a little bit hypocritical, but, you know, when you're... As they age, they've earned the right to get a little something special on top of their diet, plus other components to the food that can come into play are, for example, joint supplements like omega-3 fatty acids. There are foods with glucosamine in them. There are foods that are a little bit more calorically dense as pets age.
Arthritis is a pretty common problem for older pets. What can you do to help prevent that?
Just had the conversation 15 minutes ago in the parking lot with 7-year-old Wrigley. And it was, here again, the questions that we ask in the exam room, or in this case in the parking lot, are all about an early detecting the onset of deficiencies. And the report was Wrigley used to just step up onto the couch effortlessly, and now he has to take a run at it to jump on the couch. And that's kind of the first sign of my hip, my knees, or my back hurt a little bit. We took radiographs. Everything looks great. The knees and hips look great on radiograph. But there's a dog that it's time to start thinking about supplements. And there's no shortage of opinions. There's no shortage of research out there that will either support or not support supplements, but there's a fairly tight package of them. Glucosamine is one that we hear about very frequently. Active people are often on it. My younger clients with older pets look at me as if to say, what's that all about? Kind of like a dial-up or kind of like a corded telephone. But other things that can be beneficial, supplements that can be beneficial, are omega-3 fatty acids, fish oil, are popular.
And so this week I'm pet sitting for a slightly older dog, and the friend said, well, she gets a couple of sardines every day.
Mm-hmm.
and so is that... So is that sort of helping along those lines, you think?
That's sort of helping, but it also speaks to an issue that's somewhat rampant with regard to nutraceuticals. And we can speak in one fell swoop. We can speak to glucosamine, fish oil, and CBD. I'll go ahead and throw it out there because somebody will eventually. And some of the, if we truly want to realize the benefit of those products, it has to be an appropriate product with appropriate content and given very, very consistently. If we are to realize the anti-inflammatory benefit of whether it be omega-3 fatty acids, the fish oil in the sardines or the glucosamine or the CBD, it has to be a good quality product with proper ingredients given very consistently.
Our guest today, Dr. Bill Storck, is with the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. Been there for a long time, talking with him about pet care and pet health, zeroed in about on elderly pets, but take other questions as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Bill Storck from the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in. Again, you can call us at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Diane in Mercer, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, on Memorial weekend, I have had a very, very healthy 7-year-old dog that I ran 5 miles with every other day. And the Thursday before Memorial weekend, he was kind of stiff. So I took him into the vet on Friday morning, and she gave him some Rimadyl. And I thought maybe he had a parasite, so we gave him some stuff. And Saturday, he collapsed, and we rushed him to a 24-hour clinic, and he died that night of pericardial effusion. Is that common?
Well, first of all, goodness gracious, I am so sorry, and that is positively devastating to have lost a dog so young and so quickly. And the answer to the question is, yeah, it's not really all that unusual. Perchance, first of all, 5 miles every other day. That is awesome. Second of all, by any chance, a golden retriever lab or a German Shepherd?
He was German Shepherd mix.
Yeah, okay. The most common cause of pericardial effusion is heart-based tumors. There are a variety of tumor types that can be found at the base of the heart. And sometimes they can be slow-growing and insidious, and you have no clue whatsoever that they're there. An early sign can be shortness of breath or a coughing that's not necessarily explained. But regrettably, sadly, painfully, sometimes the first sign is that they bleed out into their chest and pass.
Oh man.
The one thing that I hope to impart is the fact that in all likelihood there's positively nothing that you could have done, nothing that you could have detected, and if you had, short of absolutely heroic open chest surgeries, those things have a tendency to be invasive, metastatic, and there's nothing that you could have done.
Oh, very sorry, Diane. Thank you very much for calling, but sorry for your loss. Oh, man. John in Shawano, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Oh, hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have two cats and a younger Jack Russell, anyway, a 13-year-old and 3-month in 3 days, so she was born on my living room floor unexpectedly, a black lab mix. And she spends a lot of her day on her doggy bed in the living room. When she gets up, of course, you know, her hips takes her quite a bit. In the past, I was, she gets a little tuna every morning and also a hard-boiled egg chopped up. I was in my mortar and pestle grinding up a glucosamine type thing that I found online. I'm on an incredible budget these days. I was wondering if a baby aspirin or anything else might help her old hips there.
I love the fact that you asked that question, and those old gray muscles have a way straight to my heart. The thing about baby aspirin is, and it used to be a very common recommendation for us, because aspirin, one of its properties is that it's a pretty darn good anti-inflammatory. The others of its property are it's even better at causing gastric ulcers. And what we have found out that is that in order to give a dose significant enough to provide pain relief, then we would be risking the possibility of giving her a stomach ulcer. About how much does she weigh by chance?
She's around 70 pounds.
Okay.
And she's not overweight. Yep.
Yeah, and that was my suspicion. So at 13 years of age, and I have a vivid image of the dog of whom you speak, there are some anti-inflammatories that are available through your veterinarian that are reasonably priced, one of which is Medicam, and Medicam is available on the human side as well. But there is a pill that is a 7.5 milligram pill, and a 70-pound dog is a perfect candidate for half of those once a day. That could very much benefit her mobility. Now, in our clinic, my most powerful recommendation, bordering on a requirement, is that when we put those older dogs on anti-inflammatories, we do blood work and we check in on their liver and kidneys. Now, if that's financially not a possibility, you know what, your veterinarian very well may judge, man, we're all about comfort, and even if our liver and kidneys are aging and not performing perfectly, it's all about how comfortable can we make that dog in however much time they have left. So there are veterinary-specific anti-inflammatories that are going to serve you much better.
John, thank you for calling. Appreciate it, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Barbara in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thanks a lot. I have a 13-year-old Pomeranian. When her brother died, I started giving her some people food, a little bit. But the thing is, she started to I give her primal nuggets, raw nuggets, and she started turning her nose up at it. And she also developed a cough with a hack at the end of it that doesn't happen that often, but it can happen once or twice a day. And I don't know what that could be, but she's been checked. The vet says she might have a little murmur. My concern is, as far as her food, I thought that I should probably be giving her some kind of a kibble, but I can't seem to find one that she'll eat.
Well, at 13 years of age and a Pomeranian, don't feel obligated to get hard food in them. It's not unusual for her to have a little bit of a heart murmur. What about her teeth? What did your vet say about her teeth?
And for the first time, and they were fine except for one loose little tooth that he took out.
Okay.
But she's fine. But ever since she's had the teeth done, she will not chew any of her things she used to chew. I used to get her a dental chew. She won't even chew that anymore. It's not that hard, but she just doesn't seem to want to chew.
Okay. Well, at 13 years of age, I think the horses are figuratively out of the barn, or in other words, you're probably past the point at which a dental chew is going to actually benefit the teeth. And at this point in time, our goal becomes getting nutrition in her. And you said you started to feed her people food, and you can, to some extent, start to culture their palate and spoil them a little bit if they start getting used to people food. And that's not a bad thing. The one thing I would very much caution you against is be really careful of how much fat you give them. If you give them ground beef, for example, please ensure that you have toweled the excess fat off of it. If you give them meat, make sure the fat is trimmed off of it, because Pomeranians are our poster children for a condition called pancreatitis, and excessive fat can accelerate that process, and it can be life-threatening. So have you, by any chance, attempted to moisten the kibble with, for example, low-sodium beef or chicken broth?
No, I haven't tried that. Like I said, I've been giving her the Primal Soft Food, and mm-hmm. she was doing well with it. And I don't even know if I'm giving her the right amount. I, like, give her 2 ounces in the morning and then 1 ounce in the afternoon. And one nugget, and I don't even know if I'm giving her the right amount. And I thought kibble tended to help them to live longer. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
Well, at this stage of the game, she's lived long. And what it is, she's kind of like my dog that we were talking about at the beginning of the program, in which case... Or like when my dad was in a nursing home, if he said he wanted a smoothie from McDonald's, I went and got a smoothie from McDonald's for him. And at this stage of the game, what I would recommend is it's more important that she gets calories in her as compared to how the calories are delivered. And you may consider shuffling the deck a little bit if the canned food that you're giving is of chicken or beef or whatever the case may be. You might want to try changing the protein source or something to that effect.
There you go, Barbara, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Catherine had asked about drug Galectin for dogs. This goes back to her dog is 14-year-old lab and has been having trouble getting up from the floor. He does have liver problems. So Galectin.
Yeah, Galectin. I wonder if by any chance she's talking about Galliprant, because Galectin, by name, I'm not immediately familiar with. And in order to completely address that, we have to get into a little bit of intricacies, which we won't. It depends on how elevated those liver enzymes are versus how the rest of the system is working. And the point that I'm attempting to make here is that if our liver enzymes are elevated and truly the dog is on their victory tour, on their farewell tour, if the drug helps them feel more comfortable so they move around a little bit better, in my opinion at least, I think it's better to have fewer comfortable days than more painful days.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ed in Grays Lake, Illinois, emailed that he has a senior cat concerned about dental cleaning. How can you alleviate concerns over sedating a senior cat? Do the risks outweigh the benefits?
In all likelihood, and of course, without actually seeing the cat, I can't speak with ultimate authority, and that would be lie in the hands of your veterinarian. But so frequently, our clients will say things to the effect of, I am just so scared of anesthesia. And my response is, you know, we are too. And for that reason, I bet your veterinarian takes nearly every precaution there is. For example, I had knee surgery 5 or 6 years ago. The pre-anesthetic blood work that they did on me was an AIDS test. If we too were to have done that same procedure on one of our canine or feline patients, we do pre-anesthetic blood work, a CBC, a chemistry panel to check on liver and kidney functions and electrolyte functions. And then when we do that procedure, there's a number of ways that we make it as safe as it can possibly be. In all likelihood, your veterinarian will place an intravenous catheter so that their kidneys are being supported, their blood pressure is being monitored, their heart rate, their EKG are all being monitored throughout the procedure. There will be a technician that is dedicated to doing nothing but monitoring anesthesia to make sure respiratory rate, heart rate, blood pressure are all optimal throughout the procedure. And then And then another way that in veterinary medicine or in human medicine, I assume, that we make it as safe as possible is by way of pain management. And we do that, we call it multimodal pain management, in which case we give anti-inflammatories going into the procedure. And then if we're going to have to do extractions of the teeth, then we'll do local nerve blocks as well. So if we stop pain before it starts, it allows us to maintain anesthesia at a much safer plane. They don't have to be as deep. And we will never in a million years claim that anesthesia is not without risk, but that's kind of the package. That's how we approach it to make it as safe as it can possibly be. And dental disease is frequently life-limiting on cats. It can lead to heart disease. It can lead to reduced appetite. I mean, the reason why your cat and your dog have bad breath is because their mouths are infected and those abscessed teeth are infected.
I had one of my cats needed to have her teeth cleaned. I started her on greenies. And the next time the vet saw Tiger, she said, "I can't believe their teeth are so clean."
It can be beneficial, and especially if you jump in before what we call grade 2 or 3 dental disease. And there is another tool that when our food representative was detailing us on this product, I was very, very doubtful. There are commercially available dental diets. And there is nothing magical about these diets. It's simply that the kibble are constructed in such a fashion that when the animals bite down on the kibble, it scrubs their teeth. I have been shocked and amazed at how effective those products can be if we start early. And that's part of the conversation that we have early in life. And yeah, I mean, good for Tiger. That's awesome.
Tiger loves them. Let's go to Carol in New Richmond. Hi, Carol.
Hi there.
What can we do for
you?
Can you
hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I just have two questions. One is, how can I tell if a lake has blue algae? I'd like to let our dog go, you know, enjoy the lake, but just worried about that since we did have a family member that had their dog go last year into a lake and then passed away from it. So concerned about that. And then also, we have a dog in the family that is suffering from what we think might be dog depression, although they are pursuing, you know, quite a few labs. And I think I just had spoke to that family member, and I think they might even do an EKG just to see if there's some arrhythmia.
Awesome questions. First of all, with regard to the blue-green algae, that's a real live consideration, especially in inland bodies of water that don't receive a lot of circulation. And what I would do is I would march down to that pond, and I would take a sample. And probably you're going to find if you Google or look at, well, there was a time when people would look in a phone book, or if you Google a lab in the area that they can analyze water samples. And what they will probably recommend is that you take a sample from the surface at a certain depth and at another depth. And as I think this through, as the words are coming out of my head, I realize, well, the dog's probably not going to dive down to 8 feet below the surface. So water samples from near the surface and have them analyzed at a lab. For example, I'm in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Watertown is not far away, and there is Rock River Labs that does just exactly those kinds of analyses. And that's, oh, thank goodness, an awesome piece of forward thinking on your part. With regard to depression in dogs, of course, exactly as the veterinarian of your friends are doing, the first things that you do is look for underlying medical issues. You know, I'm sure that you mentioned labs. They did liver enzymes, kidney enzymes, CBC. An EKG will help look for any cardiac abnormalities. And then when you're able to rule out anything medical, then we move on to the behavioral aspect. of what could potentially be going on. And oftentimes that can be family situations. Larry, at the top of the show, you asked about how coronavirus has affected our practice. And another way that coronavirus has affected our practice is I've always carried the philosophy that if a client perceives that their animal has a problem, there's probably some validity to that. Well, in the past 3.5, almost 4 months now, the tables have been turned. And now in households where mom, dad, and the kids used to go to work first thing in the morning and come home in the middle of the afternoon, now they're home all day. So we have to ask the questions, is this a newly perceived problem? Is this a problem that is as a result of the deck being shuffled because schedules are entirely different? Or is this dog truly suffering from depression? And, you know, it could be a sight issue. It could be the hard drive. They might see things just fine, but they're processing things differently than what they have in the past. So the approach sounds extremely complete. And once they are able to have ruled out all medical issues, then you move on to the behavioral aspects. And that can include all kinds of environmental enrichment type exercises.
Thank you again, Carol, for that call and question. Cheryl in Stoughton, we'll turn to you. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I had lost a 10-year-old golden retriever about 2 weeks ago. And it was one of those situations, you know, where she had one little problem. I took her to the vet all the time, but I never mentioned this one little problem, because the last 6 months or so, she was, when she would recline on the floor and get all the way down, at the very end of that, she would kind of groan a little bit. And I thought, oh, she's got arthritis, you know. Well, then less than 2 weeks ago, or about 2 weeks ago, she started having a slight cough a few times a day. So took her to the vet on a Thursday, and he said, well, her heart sounds good. Her lungs sound good. She looks okay. Let's just give her an antibiotic on what's going on. Maybe she just has a little respiratory something. Well, then last Monday, she stopped eating over the weekend, Sunday night. And so I took her in Monday, and that gave her an x-ray. And 2 hours later, he called me and said she had lung cancer all over her lungs. And come to find out, next few days, she had hemangiosarcoma and didn't see a thing other than this little groan when she laid down. Always to the vet, didn't find a thing. But then after that Monday, she didn't eat for 3 days or go outside or want to do anything. So we euthanized her of last Thursday. So, you know, it's hard to see when you are. I thought we were very vigilant. We're with her all the time. Vets all the time, but you never know, you know. It's hard for the vet as well as for the owners. But
it is.
So I want to caution, if people groan, you know, at the very end, I mean, ask about arthritis. Ask about, you know, because we were never told her hips were bothering or anything.
Yeah.
Well, and the first caller that had a very similar situation mentioned the exact same situation, and her dog died within a couple of days of having been diagnosed as well. And she asked, well, how common is this? Well, the answer is that in the space of 45 minutes on the radio, we've found two dogs whose life-limiting issue was a heart-based tumor. And the one thing that I can assure you, which is the same thing that I assured her, is that, yes, you did your diligence. You did your part. And had you known that was there, there are precious few things that you could have done for those types of tumors, short of University of Wisconsin oncologist full-on chemotherapy and radiation, which is an option, you know, if you own WeatherTech and you're able to donate $5 million to the University of Wisconsin College of Veterinary Medicine. But even so, that, you know, those dogs, they don't get 5 more years, but they might get a few more years. So you did your part.
You did your part. Cheryl, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Bill Stork, our guest today. He has been with the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic for over 25 years. Great to have him with us to answer your pet questions. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Bill Stork of the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. Great to have him along. Thanks so much for listening in. We'll take some more calls now. And Greg in Sheboygan, I believe, has a question for us. So let's go to Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Good morning. When I got out of the Army, it was a long time ago, I came home. Now, the collie, my parents owned a collie, and it liked to stay in the back porch area, but it was flat against the concrete, and it was moist, damp, and cold. And the dog, when I came out of the Army, I worked on animals. I did biochemistry. I cut up so many animals, and I killed them to do necropsies. But when I looked at the dog, when I came home, she didn't even stand up. Until I walked up to her, it was a collie, and I knew it when it was puppy. It was 5 years old when I got out of the Army, so it was 2 years old when I went in. And it remembered me, but it couldn't get up. It had pneumonia. And I told my mother and father, take the dog to the vet right now because it's going to die of pneumonia. It's got pneumonia. And they didn't, and it died 2 days later. And I was wondering, with dogs, when they get pneumonia, when they get respiratory ailments, if it's 2 days from when they're going to die, can you save them? Could I have saved her if I'd have taken her in myself right then? Could I have saved her? This has preyed on me since I got out of the Army.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's an amazingly pragmatic question, first of all. Second of all, thank you very much for your service. And third of all, if you encounter a dog that has respiratory issues to the point that they're not able to stand, then being able to save them 2 days later is not that likely. And for a number of reasons. For one thing, pneumonia is kind of a big, broad classification of lots of causations, and you know that from your days in the service doing necropsies. There's lots of viruses, lots of bacteria, and that can cause pneumonia and respiratory change, not to mention potential heart ramifications that could be involved as well. And then, if perchance, was this by any chance a farm dog? Hello?
I think we lost him, so.
We may have lost him, but I'll continue answering the question. If, perchance, that pneumonia was caused by a disease called blastomycosis, if blasto is discovered at a point when the dog can't get up, you are swimming upstream. The prognosis is poor.
There you go, Greg. Thank you for that question and appreciate your call. Carol in Oak Creek, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Thank you. I have a 15-year-old cat that I adopted as a senior. She's had lots of health problems and expense, but she's a delightful little girl. She got over a severe case of Pseudomonas last year. She's having mobility issues now. Her blood work and x-rays, the blood work is good. The x-rays aren't bad. The vet said that she's having pain in her rear end because, if you can imagine a normal-looking cat, her body weight has shifted from the rear of the cat to the front of the cat. She's happy overall, eats well. I've made accommodations. I have a low litter box, 2 inches high, so she can just step in and out. She doesn't jump on furniture, you know. I kind of give her an elevator lift when she wants up or down. She does have pain pills that I give occasionally. She does have some respiratory issues, so we can't give her a dental anymore. Any other suggestions to make her waning years comfortable?
First of all, nice work and thank you. At the Humane Societies, we so frequently see people clamoring over kittens and young cats. And there's a population. We have clients who deliberately go out and adopt aging pets with the intention of giving them their best years. And I think it's absolutely awesome when people spend their energy to give aging cats their best years. The one thing that I might recommend is that if you're giving the pain medication every now and then, you might want to ask your veterinarian if the blood work is okay, if the kidney values, liver values are okay. It very well may be safe to give those medications on a daily basis, because the mechanism of action of those medications is oftentimes such that it's easier and more effective to stay comfortable than it is to get comfortable again. And this is a point of conversation that invokes what I call the Vernon Strasberg example. And what we hear so frequently is people will say, well, he's not in pain. He just doesn't want to walk on it. Or he's not in pain. He's just slow to get up. And Vernon Strasberg was one of my favorite old German dairy clients. And when I first got to know him, he would milk cows, climb out of the parlor, and on his way to the tractor to mix feed, he would stop at the skid loader and lean up against the skid loader and catch his breath. Then he would walk over to the hay rack and stop and lean up against the hay rack and catch his breath. And finally, he would make it to the tractor and climb up on the tractor and mix feed. Vernon Strasberg, not once did he ever say, boy, my hips hurt. Then he went to the hospital, got a hip replacement, walked out of the parlor, walked to the tractor, climbed on the tractor, and away he went. Animals manifest discomfort in a multitude of ways. And, you know, we look to, are they not doing things that they used to do regularly? And that can be a very excellent indication of discomfort.
Interesting. Carol, thank you so much for calling. Debbie in Whitewater, we'll go to you.
Hello there. I don't have a question. I just wanted to do a shout out to the doctor. About a year ago, my dog went down while hunting at a nearby hunt club, and we called around to see if we could get into a vet on an emergency basis, and we were turned down. But Lake Mills saw us, and the dog's life was saved.
And my technicians, that I remember that day well. I can't reproduce your name immediately, but my technicians were absolutely amazing that day as well. And we were glad to have been able to help, and we're glad to hear that everything is going well.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling, Debbie. Ellen in Holman, your turn. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I have a 10-year-old Yorkie, and he's very active, full of energy, always been really healthy, and he still is. But I've noticed maybe in the last few weeks, he seems to be urinating an awful lot, and I haven't noticed any excessive drinking. He's always been a good water drinker. It is kind of hard to tell, you know, when I'm off at work all day, but it just seems like he's really urinating a lot. I am going to take him in Friday and have him checked for a UTI or anything like that, but I was wondering if you had any ideas about that.
And what they'll probably do in addition to the urinalysis is recommend doing blood work as well, because some of the important distinctions are urinating a larger volume or urinating more frequently. And a 10-year-old Yorkie is probably small enough that maybe he could be drinking more water and you might not necessarily notice that. But it could be something so simple as a urinary tract infection. It could be diabetes. Yorkies are kind of poster children for this sneaky disease called Cushing's disease or kidney disease, etc. So they're probably going to recommend doing blood work as well, especially if there's been a significant change in weight. So Yeah, I love the fact that you have made that observation and you're having it checked out while we can still do something about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Ellen, for that call. Another person emailed to ask what you think about pet insurance.
Positively fantastic question. My answer is do it early. And the caller from Whitewater mentioned the emergency hospitals, and they weren't able to get into an emergency hospital. There's a lot of amazing care that is available for pets. Some of them that can be taken care of at your friendly local veterinary clinic at the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. I noticed that you are sponsored by True Veterinary Clinic. Those guys are absolutely awesome. As an example, one of the most common injuries that we'll see in athletic dogs, for example, Labs, Golden Retrievers, German Shepherds, is a torn anterior cruciate ligament, just like Jordy Nelson for the Packers. Those dogs can return to full athleticism. However, the surgery is anything but inexpensive. And to be able to have pet health insurance so you're prepared for the eventuality is an awesome idea.
Dr. Bill Clark, our guest with the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. He'll be with us right up till 12:30. We're going to take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Dr. Bill. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health on the Ideas Network today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Bill Stork. Dr. Bill is the owner operator of the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. He works with both small and large animals. He's authored a couple of books, writes a blog, and contributes articles to local newspapers. So, what pest questions do you have? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Bill, a listener emailed that they have an elderly cat who doesn't seem to keep up with his hygiene and grooming. They've noticed mats and dandruff. Should they try a bath, and what kind of shampoo should they use? The internet says never use people shampoo. Could she use Ivory soap or Dawn?
We usually reserve Ivory soap and Dawn for when they have gotten into something oil-based or into skunks. And what she's describing is not unusual. And as far as grooming inadequacies in older cats, and my best speculation is that it just hurts or they just don't care anymore. And a couple of different things can be done. If the cat is tolerant, the biggest thing is going to be attempting to comb them out. If the cat is old, but not so old that it's still safe to sedate them, it's not unusual for us to do a sedated grooming, and we'll, oftentimes we'll do a lion cut on those cats and clip them down to nearly bare skin. And as far as specific shampoos, there's lots of shampoos that are, for example, oatmeal and aloe-based. If there are some specific skin pathology like infections going on, if there's a greasy feel, then your veterinarian is going to have a shampoo that has a chlorhexidine base to it. And chlorhexidine is an antiseptic that is actually present in surgical scrub that is really good against fungal skin infections.
Sherry in Merrill emailed that her 2.5-year-old Aussie mix is usually very energetic, loves to play, but for the last 2 weeks he's not interested in playing, acts tired, pants a lot, even in 72-degree weather. Should she be concerned?
positively. And in Merrill, Wisconsin, the first, second, and third thing I would do is get that dog Lyme tested. And some of the things that we specifically focus on in young and middle-aged dog is heartworm and flea and tick prevention. And even in dogs that are prevented in a bulletproof fashion, dogs that are vaccinated for Lyme disease and dogs that are on very consistent flea and tick prevention, consistent quality flea and tick prevention, every now and then we will still find a dog that is Lyme positive. And for a dog that young and for an Aussie cross to be slowed down by anything is noteworthy.
Kim in McQuantigo, let's go to you now. Hi, Kim. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a cat, a female cat, who's 12 years old. Pretty good health, a little bit of pain in her leg, so I have a litter box on the main level. But she does throw up when she eats, occasionally when she eats the dry food. Now, she has some tooth issues, so I was continuing to feed her the dry food. But do you have any recommendations for cat vomiting occasionally?
Well, when you say occasionally, are you talking once every 2 weeks, twice a week? How frequently are we talking?
I would say about once every 2 weeks, yes.
Okay. And when they vomit, does it seem to take place very shortly after she has eaten, or is it fairly random in relationship to when she eats?
It's random, but the food actually kind of comes out. I mean, you can still see it. The food.
Okay. Well, a lot of that depends on the condition of the overall cat. And one of the things that I profess is that in veterinary medicine, we have some really sophisticated diagnostic modalities. We can do blood work, x-rays, ultrasounds, CTs, and MRIs. But the most valuable piece of diagnostic equipment in our clinic is the scale. And if your 12-year-old cat is maintaining their weight well, they are active, if their appetite is normal, if they're energetic, then honestly, I asked a client once upon a time in the course of general questions in a physical exam, does your cat vomit? And she looked at me as if I had never been to college before. And she said, well, of course it vomits. It's a cat. It's what they do. But in order to assign the proper significance to that, if bright, alert, and responsive, eating well, energetic, and maintaining weight, then, you know, some of the things that I might do, as simple as this might sound, is simple hairball remedies like canned pumpkin, if they will go for it, a sprinkle of Miralax on their food, or adding some extra moisture to their diet can help as well.
All right. There you go, Kim. Thank you. Bob in Monona, your turn now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry and guest. I'm a little concerned about my 60-pound golden doodle handling the noise and firecrackers in another 10 days or so with 4th of July. Does the doctor suggest anything? Or
absolutely awesome time to be thinking about that. Depending upon how excited your 50-pound golden doodle gets in response to loud noises, there's a number of things that you can do. The first of which, when it's daylight, go for the biggest, longest walk that you can possibly go for. Second of all, distracting things that the dog might latch onto can be very, very valuable. For example, if your dog chews on Kongs or antlers or whatever your favorite chew toy, if they will latch onto that. Also, depending, and I'm kind of, instead of asking a question, I'm speaking fairly broadly because I bet you're not the only person who has this question in the state of Wisconsin. If the dog, in response to fireworks, will go downstairs in the basement, burrow behind the toilet out of earshot and fall asleep, then that's a perfectly optimal outcome. But if the dog is to the point that it literally paces and pants just simply at the percussion, because there in Monona you're going to be surrounded by quite a bit of noise, there are a few situational anti-anxiety drugs that your veterinarian can recommend for you. One of them is a drug called trazodone, is a tool that we will use for situational anxiety.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Let's take another call. Bonnie in Crandon, it's your turn. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, good morning. I should say afternoon. I have a question. We've got a one-year-old German short hair male pointer, and the party that I bought him from said that he has all his puppies on this no-grain food all the way from, they can be on it from puppy to adult. Now, since this, I've talked to two vets, and they both say, oh, no, you shouldn't have them on no grain food. It can cause, we're finding out, heart problems.
Yeah, an important distinction there, in which case association does not necessarily mean causation. And there are some intricacies in the research having to do with that association. And what they're talking about is there are a population of dogs that were on grain-free diets, and there were some specific ingredients in those grain-free diets that later went on to develop a heart condition, dilated cardiomyopathy, in which case that does not necessarily mean that the grain-free food caused dilated cardiomyopathy. That means the dogs that were on that food developed cardiomyopathy. Well, there were also dogs in the control group that weren't on grain-free diets that developed the same heart condition. But when you do the research, you are required to report any adverse conditions. All of that said, I don't have my dogs on grain-free diets anyway, for the simple reason that there was a period of time when, as a profession and lots of breeders, lots of owners, were kind of on the grain-free diet train. We do feel that grain, and especially grain meal, needs to not be the first ingredient. And, you know, meat and meat products needs to be the first ingredient in the food. But I wouldn't have my dog on grain-free food anyway. And that's an opinion. You're going to find lots of different opinions out there. But that's where that recommendation came from. And it's worthy of caution. Absolutely, it's worthy of caution.
And thank you for calling, Bonnie. Let's go to Dawn in Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Dawn.
Hey. I have two older male cats. I think they're about 11, 12, and I have a litter box for each of them set up. And a few months ago, my orange one, I call him the orange one, he started going to the bathroom outside the box, and he's always got the runs, and he farts. It's really weird. And he'll go in the box and outside the box, and I clean it every day. He's on high-end food. I've tried switching his food. He's not in any kind of pain that I can tell or anything else. He just goes outside the box.
Whoa, Nellie. You just described about an hour-long veterinary visit, and although Jill told me at the top of the show it was okay for me to give long answers, which incidentally is something that no one has ever said to me before, but lots could be going on. And earlier in the show we talked about a dog that was having depression issues, and the first place you start with any potential medical underpinnings: liver disease, kidney disease, mobility issues that could be subtle. And once we rule those things out, then we start talking about behavior and environment, because as cats age, and 10 years old is not an ancient cat, but it's not a kitten anymore either, and their environment can change. And one of the things that you said in your description was that you have a litter box for each of them. And if you have two cats that abide by their own litter boxes, that's pretty outstanding, and that's pretty unusual. But in these older cats, if we rule out everything medical, then we circle back and we take a really hard look at access, really the intricacies of the environment and the litter box. And that's about as specific as I can be. That's a huge question.
Yeah, a very huge question. Thank you, Don. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Julie in Randolph, your turn. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a cat I've had since she was a kitten, and she's 16 going on 17, and she outlived her daddy and her brother, and lately she's been, like, her eyes have been super dilated, and she's been just going in circles, bumping into things, and I know she had a brain injury when she was real little kitten. She got attacked by a Rottweiler. I don't know if I should just kind of let her live her life out, or if I don't know what to do.
A 17-year-old cat that survived a Rottweiler, you need to name that cat Lucky. So that is awesome. The things that you described, circling and dilated pupils, are pathognomonic, a deadlock cinch for what we call SBI, or something bad inside. And there are a few transient conditions that could account for that. There's one called feline vestibular syndrome in humans. We call that vertigo. That can be transient, and they can get over it. There's a possibility that there's something bad inside. Could be a tumor. In rare, rare circumstances of cats that go outside, there's also toxoplasmosis that can have neurologic manifestations. At this stage of the game, it's very much an individual decision, because, as we talked about at the beginning, we're all about quality of life. And there's probably nothing your veterinarian will be able to do for this condition, but there are times when we find things that we didn't necessarily expect. And frequently at points like this, I speak to my clients. I use the Warren Zevon example. And after he had been diagnosed with lung cancer, Warren Zevon was on the David Letterman show. Dave was broken up. He was bawling. And he said, "My God, how do you deal with it?" And Warren Zevon said, "Well, Dave, I enjoy every sandwich." And I think those are words to live by for us, and for you, having enjoyed 17 years with a kitten for all these years.
Yeah, absolutely. Julie, thank you for calling. Let's go to Barb in Boscobel. Hi, Barb.
Yes, hi. My problem is with other people's cats. We have a flower garden right in front of our front porch where we frequently sit. And the neighborhood cats seem to think that's their litter box, and it smells terrible. How can we keep them out of there?
Oh, my. I think I have an emergency I have to run to rather than try and answer that question. About the closest thing that you can do, if you live in a neighborhood where people allow their cats to run free, actually, come to think of it, there are a few options that you may be able to try. The first and most simple is lavender. And their lavender is available in a variety of different forms, whether it be spray on, sprinkle on, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not exactly sure whether that would work or not. There are also some really clever systems whereby they're motion sensitive, and they will either make noise or they will squirt water. You mount them down low so that when the cat the cats, the offending cats, try and enter the litter box, I mean your flower garden, they trip it and they get sprayed with water or noises get made. And that's about as close as you can get, because for cats, I mean, you probably don't want to build a border wall around your property.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we had Janice email that her 18-and-a-half-year-old rat Tyler had to be put down, and the vet came to the house. After the first injection, she cried loudly until the second was given. This was heartbreaking. Does this happen often?
Very, very infrequently. And most of us have a protocol by which the only thing they feel is that is the first injection, if they feel that at all. And that is positively heartbreaking. It has happened to anyone who has ever practiced either vocalizing or you know, opening their eyes, breathing hard, things like that, because people so frequently will say things like, gosh, I wish my dog or my cat would just pass peacefully, which is exactly what we attempt to achieve when we do euthanasia. It happens very infrequently.
You've written a couple of books. You're working on a third. What do you write about?
Humanity. As a veterinarian, from our side of the table, we get to know and get to be acquainted at a really significant level with people from every conceivable walk, you know, from farmers to research scientists. And one of the things that was imparted upon me by my mom around the dinner table is she just refused to believe that people could be bad. Everyone was good in my mother's eyes. And if you carry that perspective forward, even people, clients who you may not initially agree with, give them an opportunity. And what I've learned is that people who are kind to their animals are universally good people. Just stick around and give it time, and you will learn that that is almost invariably the case.
Wow, and you're right about that. That is very, very cool. Well, I tell you what, I hope you would come back and be with us again, Dr. Bill. This has been just great.
Are you kidding? It was a nice break. You ought to hear what's going on outside of my office right now.
Well, my cat or my dog that it's not mine, but I'm keeping for a week. I'm surprised you didn't hear. You may have heard her in the background barking a little bit because she's sleeping and she's having some dreams. So,
what do Tiger and Coco think about this pet sitting situation?
Well, they're ensconced high up and away most of the time, but they're getting used. They're getting used to it. They'll probably make my life miserable after Lila leaves. But in the meantime, we're dealing with it.
They're plotting, Larry. They're plotting.
Thanks, Bill. I hope we can work again together. Thank you so much.
That'd be wonderful. You bet. Thank you, Larry.
Dr. Bill Stork with the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, the owner-operator of it, does a wonderful job, and I'm hoping that we can get him back and do this again. So tomorrow at this time, we'll take a look at invasive species in our state and what being done to control them. That starts at 11, so hope you can join us for that. If you'd like to hear more about our guests or show topics, check out our new blog. Just go to wpr.org/Larry to see what's there. Thank you so much for listening. You've been a great audience, great questions, and we'll look forward to tomorrow. In the meantime, though, stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.